Schwokert. Ms. Lennon.
On behalf of Patrick Hampton, may it please the court. Edwards and Bradshaw have been the law for over 30 years. Police officers must abide by it, and state courts must apply it. Here, the state court acknowledged the applicable law, but then applied it unreasonably. It's a two-step inquiry to determine if a suspect validly waived his right to counsel after invoking it. First, the court looks at the initiation, and then the court looks at the waiver. Generally,
I mean, it seems to me, having done this for some time, that the police were extremely aware of their responsibility and did everything they needed to do. Where did they break down?
Your Honor, they did repeat Miranda warnings. I will agree with you on that, and the state court considered that. But what the state court didn't consider, and where it really broke down here, is with the context of Hampton's statements. They didn't happen. It wasn't just a one-sided conversation. They didn't happen alone. They were prompted by things that the officer said. The officer, for instance, with regard to the initiation prong, right before Hampton said, "I just don't want you guys to leave," to the officer said directly to him, "Another officer is going to come in and photograph your hands."
You see, I don't understand why that wasn't permissible. He could have said, "Another officer is going to come in and take a handwriting sample," or "Another officer is going to come in and take another mug shot," or, you know, photograph you. When the officers say something that is permissible, and I think even you agree that in isolation the photograph comment is permissible, I don't know how that changes context. Mr. Hampton then goes on to say, "I really do want to talk to you guys. I just need some time." And I'm not sure how else they can interpret that other than, "I, Mr. Hampton, want to talk to you."
Your Honor, and this is where context really becomes important. The officers weren't just saying, "We're going to take another mugshot." It's our position that this statement regarding his hands was reinterrogation. The officer was beginning to interrogate him again.
Really? When somebody says, "We're going to photograph the cuts on your hands," that's interrogation?
They were, Your Honor, directly referencing evidence of the crime. The underlying crime here was a stabbing.
Right.
That occurred, and it occurred, you know, with a knife, and there was a struggle. That's not disputed. That's part of the record here. And so it's reasonable to assume that the officers, both objectively and subjectively, should have known and did know that when they were talking directly about Hampton's hands, that they were referencing the crime, and that Hampton would then be prompted to say, "Well, no, that's not really... You know, I don't want you to take pictures of my hands."
I mean, it sounds like you have a rule in mind that says the police can't say anything that would make the suspect nervous. You know, like, "We're going to photograph your hands," or, you know, "We're going to photograph you wearing this particular shirt," or, you know, anything. I believe that police should play by the rules as much as the next person, but I don't see how they're not playing by the rules by saying, "We're going to photograph the cuts on your hands."
I certainly don't have an issue with them. I don't think it should be a rule that whenever they reference anything that automatically this is reinterrogation. This is interrogation. But I do think that it's especially important to consider the context of this statement in this interrogation to Hampton, who had repeatedly at the beginning of the interview and again during this portion of the conversation said, "I don't know if I want to talk to you. I don't trust cops. I know you're going to do the bad cop, good cop thing. I don't trust you. I want Officer," he referred to Mark, "I want Officer Mark here. I trust him. I don't trust you guys," was basically what he was saying to the officers. And
he agrees that when you hit that, you know, whatever it is, hour 238, at that point there's an unequivocal request for a lawyer. That's when the police officers say, "If you want a lawyer, we're not going to talk to you." You can hear sounds of them packing up. they're leaving. And then it's hard for me to imagine how else they could interpret what Mr. Hampton says when he says, I really do want to talk to you guys, as anything but a reinitiation. I've seen lots more vague things than that called reinitiations.
Yeah, and there he said, I just don't want you guys to leave right now.
Right. So he says, I just don't want you guys to leave right now, after the officers say somebody else, another officer, is going to come in and photograph your hands. So Hampton didn't know what that other officer was going to do when he came into the room, as opposed to the two officers who he had now built a rapport with, who were going to be leaving the room.
I really do want to talk to you guys. I just need some time to read the Bible and pray. And I gave him a Bible and left him for an hour. What are they supposed to do? I mean, they did exactly what he asked.
Well, ideally, Your Honor, we would argue that they should have provided him a lawyer that he requested. But I think when he said, I just need some time, or I really don't want you guys to leave, I just need some time, the state court didn't consider that I just need some time. The state court didn't consider what I previously discussed regarding the prompting, the statement by the officers that prompted his response. And really what I think it is just a blatant attempt to sort of direct his attention elsewhere, direct his attention off the fact that he had just invoked his right to counsel, and direct his attention back to the evidence of the crime and basically say to him, we have evidence sitting in front of us that you committed this crime, and now we're going to send another officer in who we know you probably don't trust, just like you didn't trust us, and he's going to come in and photograph your hands. And
does he ever say, I don't trust you?
He says, let me just find the direct quote. I don't really want to say nothing. I ain't got no lawyer. And then he references good cop, bad cop. This is all on appendix page 24 of our opening brief. There's the conversation where he's essentially implying, I don't trust the police officers, and I want to talk to Officer Mark. Officer Mark told me I shouldn't talk to anyone but him. So on the issue of the initiation itself, the officers were persistent. They didn't give him the lawyer that he asked for. They didn't stop talking to him. They continued to engage him in a conversation.
But they did whatever he asked.
Well, Your Honor, we'd respectfully disagree with that. They didn't do everything he asked for. They didn't give him the lawyer that he asked for. They gave him the time that he wanted, but then they came right back in the room and said, Hampton, here are your rights again. Do you waive them? Will you talk to us again? And so while they did give him time to read the Bible, they didn't give him a lawyer, and they didn't respect his invocation of his right to counsel. And then just to briefly move on to the waiver issue, this is not an area where the court considered the totality of the circumstances, the context of the statements. They took his express waiver at face value without considering that he'd previously said, I don't want to make a statement, I don't want to talk, I'm uncomfortable, I don't have a lawyer. And then, on top of that, the state court also didn't consider that before he made the express waiver, when the officers reentered the room to converse with him again, to interrogate him again, he said, he hemmed and hawed for a while and said, I don't want to say anything wrong. I don't want to say anything wrong. They went back and forth for several minutes, and then he finally said, okay, I agree to waive my rights. I agree to talk to you. This is not an uncoerced, valid waiver, and it should not have been found to be one by the state court, but the court didn't consider the circumstances here. The court didn't consider the circumstances surrounding the context surrounding Hampton's statements with regard to the initiation either, and that's really what takes this case from being just wrongly decided into being unreasonable. I'd like to reserve the remainder. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien?
May it please the Court. I share counsel's closing remarks. This is a matter of reasonableness. That's what it really comes down to. Did the police act reasonably? Did the Wisconsin Court of Appeals act reasonably when they said that the police acted reasonably? And was the district court correct in reviewing this case under the AEDPA and concluding that the state courts acted reasonably? I see nothing, I have heard nothing in counsel's argument or read nothing in counsel's brief that shows that anything that was done here was unreasonable. The question was asked by one of the members of this panel, what else were the police supposed to do here? They honored his invocation of the right to counsel when he said 2 hours and 38 minutes into the interview, I want a lawyer. They honored it. They got up to leave, and as they're leaving, he says, are you guys leaving? Apparently, they were supposed to just ignore that question and leave the room. That is unreasonable. Instead, they said, yes, we're leaving because you requested a lawyer, and that's your right. Is there any specific lawyer you want us to get? And he said, I don't know. They get up to leave, and he says, I really don't want you guys to leave. And they tell him, but you've requested a lawyer, and that's fine. Which you have the right to a public defender. Do you want us to reread the Miranda warnings? And then at that point, they, again, get up to leave and said, an officer is going to come in to photograph your hands, not to question you, to photograph your hands. This is after almost 2.5 hours of discussion about the crime. So he knows what this is all about. He knows what this officer is going to do. He's going to come in and take photos. How is that reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response from someone who's already been questioned about the crime for 2 hours and 38 minutes?
Does the record reflect anything about the condition of Mr. Hampton's hands at that point? Were they dirty, clean?
There was a comment, I believe it was Detective Heyer, in the suppression hearing testified that his hands were quite beat up and cut, which indicates probably that a suspicion that those were incurred in the assault on the victim. I believe Heyer specifically testified that they were quite injured. But again, asking a suspect to pose for a photograph or to provide samples, DNA samples, things like that, those are fairly routine. And again, this was not a request for more questioning. It was just, we're going to send him in to photograph you. And then he said, and that's important too, is his response to that was, I really do want to talk to you guys, which seems to me a continuation of what he had said before this mention of an officer coming in to photograph, that no connection between the announcement that an officer is going to come to photograph and his decision, I really want to talk to you guys.
Even if a lawyer had been present, the lawyer wouldn't and couldn't have done anything about the photographing or...
That's my understanding of the law in this area, that sort of, collecting body samples and things of that nature. And the recent Supreme Court decision in
the DNA case, yeah.
Maryland v. Craig, Maryland case, that the lawyer, had he been present, could not have objected to that procedure. So this is this whole good cop, bad cop thing, this shows how experienced Mr. Hampton was. He did know how this goes. He had been experienced. He had been questioned before. He had been arrested before. He had been given Miranda warnings before. He knew exactly what to do. And he hemmed and hawed. He was indecisive, no question about that. He knew he was in trouble. But he decided he wanted a lawyer, but then realized that a lawyer probably wasn't going to help him much, and just asked for more time, for a little religious reflection. And the officers gave it to him, 45 minutes. And then they came back into the room and reread the Miranda warnings to him, asked him if he still wanted to talk, and he said yes, he did, about some things. So he limited what he was going to talk about. And he did talk about some things, but he still never incriminated himself. And then at the end of the interview, he invoked his right to silence, not his right to counsel, but he basically said, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to talk anymore. And they said, fine. And he was returned to his cell. and then questioned the next day, 14 hours later, by Detective Peterson, the officer he wanted to talk to in the first place. And he confessed to Detective Peterson after again being advised under Miranda and again voluntarily and intelligently waiving his rights at that time. Again, this all...
You would agree if he had, you know, just counterfactually, if a person had requested a lawyer and never said anything about wanting to talk, going back over and over again and reissuing the Miranda warnings doesn't help anything.
That's correct.
I mean, just... To make sure we're all on the same
page. No, and that's what Oregon v. Bradshaw says.
Right.
The mere recitation of Miranda warnings doesn't cut it. The state has to prove that he initiated further communication, exchanges, or conversation with the police.
Yep.
And that the trilogy of statements, are you guys going to leave? I really don't want you guys to leave, and I really want to talk to you. Just give me some time for religious reflection. We believe the Wisconsin Court of Appeals reasonably interpreted it as being an initiation of further communication with police. And then he voluntarily and intelligently waived his right, Miranda rights, after the break given for religious reflection. If there are no further questions, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Lennon?
I'd like to direct the court's attention to document 10-8 in the record below. On page 18, it states he had quite a bit of cuts, scratches, bruises, lacerations to his hands. And on that issue, I'd also like to reiterate that never before had officers mentioned, and Hampton had been in custody for 5-plus hours at that point. Never before had officers mentioned taking photographs of his hands. He'd already been booked. They only mentioned those photographs after Hampton invoked his right to counsel as a way to continue trying to interrogate him. And these are the kind
there's
of...
There's no indication that was they intended to continue interrogating him. They said they were going to take a picture.
They said they were going to send another officer in to take a picture of what's essentially evidence of the crime,
right,
which it's our position that amounts to interrogation under Innes. Restarted the interrogation here, not what Hampton said before that. But it's statements like these that are really coercive. And Edwards created a clear prophylactic rule to protect suspects in the inherently coercive nature of interrogation and things like that. And here, the state court failed to apply Edwards and Bradshaw reasonably. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the